Hi there and welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
Hello everybody, Matt Walsh here with another big episode of the podcast this week. Plenty to talk about as always, and I'm joined by Jacob Michaels as always. Jake, fair bit of news around footy at the moment, it's fair to say.
Oh, is there? I haven't seen much. What's happening? Fill me in.
Well, how long have you got? Because this potty might have plenty of substance to it by the time we're all done with it. Christian Jolly from Champion Data. Normally, we'd be leaning on you in these sorts of episodes with some of your stuff that you provide stats-wise, but looks like there's going to be a fair bit of news around. How have you been traveling the last week or so?
Yeah, going all right. I did think about that, but I mean, yeah, we work with, 200 casuals around the country, and how flexible some of them have been for us, our Queensland staff, over the last, 14 months since the start of last year, and getting called up to work at short notice and 6 hours before their shift and games being moved. We've been lucky that we're still.
Is this a shout out? You love a shout out early on in the podcast.
Every weekend you just think, oh God, are we going to get these games covered? And everything's been covered 100% so far for the year. So, all right, I'll give my own company a shout out.
Yeah. Well done, champion.
Absolutely. And it's great to have Josh Dunkley back on the podcast again. He came to us. He came knocking on the door. He said, I'm in 14 days of ISO. I'm bored out of my brains already. Get us on the pod. Josh, nice to have you. Obviously not the week or the fortnight, I guess, you would have expected coming back from a shoulder injury.
Yeah, it's not. Thanks, mate. Thanks, guys, for having me again. Obviously, yeah, it's a hard situation to be in, but from just going to a local cafe, like every normal person would, to find out that I've got to isolate for 14 days is not ideal, but I'm going to have to listen to the government, do everything that they say, and yeah, I want to hopefully get out of it on the other side in one good shape.
So talk us through it, because I think the idea is that you're supposed to spend time in isolation from your exposure point. So when was that, and which game do you anticipate coming back into action?
Yeah, so that was last Wednesday, Wednesday morning. So it was about 10 o'clock or 10:30 or something like that. And I went there, and so it was 14 days from exposure. So obviously I traveled, played. So we traveled to Queensland on the Thursday, played on Saturday afternoon, and then flew back. And it wasn't until I flew back on Saturday night. So we flew back early hours Sunday morning, and I was just looking at the exposure sites, and I knew that I was sort of pretty close and that I checked in, which every good citizen does these days is check in. And yeah, sure enough, I got a message on, it was Monday night, but I'd actually tested before that because I thought that I might have been there at the time. So I'd already had a test, and it came back negative before I got that text message.
Frustrating, yeah. Must be a bit of an understatement considering the long layoff that you've had. How did the club react when you had to tell them, or did they find out at the same time? I mean, what's the process there?
Yeah, so I rang the club, like I said, because I thought that I might have crossed over earlier on the Sunday morning. And so I rang him and I just said, oh, look, this could happen. And they were like, oh, if you were certain that you were there, you're probably going to have to isolate. That's why we had the test and all that done on Sunday. And they were pretty good with it. Like, it's life these days. You can't really go or change things. It's just a matter of abiding by the rules and doing what you can to stop the spread of coronavirus.
Was this cafe one you go to regularly or a one-off?
I used to go there regularly. I used to go there probably nearly every day, to be honest. Last year in isolation, when there was no footy or anything, I would go up there and get takeaway coffee nearly every day. And then I probably haven't been there for about 6 months.
Oh, stiff.
Went there.
I hope the coffee was... See, your snobbiness and love for coffee, it's come to bite you now.
It has, yeah.
The love for avo and toast.
But I don't think, you see things in the media now and people are talking about, AFL players shouldn't be going to the rugby or shouldn't be going to cafes. Like, you've got to live a life. No. Like, the government restrictions are the government restrictions. The AFL players are living by that.
Correct.
And I think if there was a situation where we had to lock ourselves down to keep the season going, I think players would do that. But it's just a matter of, players have got to live life. So
it's a last resort. I mean, the way I see it, Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, but if this sort of interaction had happened this time last year or in June last year, for instance, where a player had been at a cafe where someone had tested positive and then they'd gone and played interstate and then come home, the reaction would have been a lot more, all right, let's just lock it down. But we're obviously starting to realize that the AFL needs the season to keep going. We need the players to keep the season going. And as we saw with what happened with GWS in Sydney, where players were scratched minutes before the first bounce, like getting the season away is clearly the priority now.
Yeah, I think that one, the what happened at the Giants Swans game is probably more significant purely because it was so many more people involved. But I agree. I think had it been 12 months earlier, there would have... It's because we're prepared for it now to some extent. Like the AFL is expecting this to sort of happen. So there's contingencies in place to as to what we'll do. No one was expecting it last year. It just sort of came out of nowhere and nobody knew how to handle it. So, yeah, I agree with that. But at the same time, should the season continue? I don't know. That's a question. You know, you have your doubts on as to whether we'll keep going. I know my preseason prediction going back on the podcast 6 months ago was at some point it will be stopped. But who knows? Who knows if it will? We don't know at this point.
I mean, yeah, exactly right. It's kind of a day-by-day case at this point. And now you see that
It's an hour-by-hour, really. Well, yeah, just constantly changing.
An hour ago, South Australia announced they were going into lockdown. So, you know, Adelaide Oval and whether the AFL and government exemptions can be sort in time for a couple of games over there.
I just realized we didn't do something for the first time ever. We missed our something we noticed.
Oh, you noticed that we missed something?
Yeah, we just got so excited about this cafe story.
On the podcast. Yeah, all right, well, let's jump into that. Well, while I've got you, Jake, something from the weekend that you noticed.
Well, there were a couple of things I noticed, but the one that really stood out was early on in the Richmond game, Dusty got pinged for... I think he got pinged for a throw in the center of the ground. And I heard him. I couldn't quite make out what he was saying, but he was having a bit of a go at the umpire, sort of disputing it, because I don't think it was a throw. And I actually thought, I think that's the first time I've ever heard through the effects mic Dusty saying anything on a footy field. You never see him speak at all.
You get a few death stares. What did he say?
I don't know what he said, but you could kind of see him talking and you couldn't quite pick it up on the mic, but you could see his mouth moving towards the umpire. I don't know. I don't know when you've played against him, Dunks, do you hear him speak much? He doesn't strike me as someone who talks much on the field.
Nah, he doesn't talk a lot. But I have heard him speak. Like, yeah, he does, you know, every now and then he'll chime in with something little, but yeah, I know what you're saying because he's not the type that always talks and talks back to the umpires.
He's a Dubois example.
3 or 4 years ago, him and Shane Mumford had a pretty good back and forth, which I think was caught on cameras. I think DeBoer was tagging Martin and he was getting a bit frustrated. But I do remember there was a...
Well, that was the one where he got suspended after that.
Oh, was that the middle finger one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite chatty that game, but yeah, probably not much since.
While we got you, Christian, something you noticed from the weekend?
I had two little ones as well, but one, just a quick one. The nomination in the ruck, we all know how, you know, how annoying that is to watch and things, but it really... sort of got the players sort of out of sorts on Thursday night. Fremantle Geelong, there was one ruck contest to throw in. I think Razor Ray was officiating and asked for the nominating ruckman. Sean Darcy nominated and he was yelling out, "No, too late, Sean, too late." So he was yelling out, "Stay out, Sean, stay out, Sean." And Rhys Stanley was in the ruck who had nominated. The ball gets thrown in. He's hearing the umpire just bark out these instructions and you could hear it on the effects mic as well. It sounded like he was saying, "Stay out, Geelong, stay out, Geelong." So Rhys Stanley, who's in the ruck by himself, as soon as the ball's got in the air, he's heard the umpire scream something and just ducked because he doesn't know if he's doing the wrong. It's hit him on the back and play on. I just thought it's just one of those ones.
Just sums up how stupid the rule is.
And again, I don't like the umpires barking too many instructions. And because he kept saying over and over again, "Stay out, Sean, stay out, Sean." Sean Darcy knew he didn't need to be yelled at anymore. He was out of it. Rhys Stanley's sort of concentrating and hearing all these barking instructions. I just thought it's another one where, the umpires are just probably... Yeah, I don't think they should be instructing the player so much. Just yell out the rule once.
You talk about quarters going too long. That's an easy way to fix it. That saves 10 seconds every time a ball up is.
Player make the mistake and then call it. Why do you have to constantly tell the players the rules? There was one where a player took a mark going back into this week. I can't remember who it was. They took a mark going back through the point post. And they got instructed by the umpire to say, "You got to play on back through here. You can't play on back through the goals." It's like... You shouldn't have to say that. Like, if they do, then it's a behind. You don't need to tell players the rules.
How across the rules are you, Dunks? I mean, every single rule, have you got a real good grasp on it? Or are there some that you get pinged for sometimes and you go, oh, or you see someone else or a teammate get pinged and you go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that one?
I think he's all right when you say, like, it confuses the players when, you know, you're in a contest and you're hearing all these things in your ear, like, that the umpires are trying to tell you, but then it just confuses yourself. So I think we have an idea of what the general rules are, but because they're changing...
That's like, good.
they're changing weekly, really. Like,
yeah.
The way that umpires called holding the ball on the weekend in our game, like, it was just random. And it's just like, oh, well, that's what's happening this week. So...
Mm.
You know, sometimes they're really whistle happy, sometimes they're not. They let the game go a little bit, but I think the confusion in contests in a live situation is very, very hard at times.
And what I've noticed with the holding the ball free kick, and I don't know, you know, coaches usually pick this up quicker than everyone else, is I reckon you're being called for holding the ball less if you let the ball go. So if the ball comes, if you throw the ball or drop the ball or get rid of the ball and it falls out, it's play on. But if you get caught in the same tackle and you just the ball gets held to you, that's being called holding the ball a lot more. So promoting throwing and dropping. And
well, when I grew up, dropping the ball was a rule that got paid, and you just don't see it anymore.
Well, it's not in the rules. It's just an incorrect disposal.
Yeah,
like the wording around it changes, like the nuances change quite often. So I can kind of understand the frustrations, but yeah, fair enough. Okay, we've opened a can of worms with the umpire in there. Dunks, anything from the weekend that you noticed that's a bit quirky, not to throw under the bus without having prepared too much?
Anything that I noticed, not quirky, but I did notice it firsthand, like how good Harry Sharp is from the Gold Coast Suns.
Mm.
Very good player, obviously rising star this week, and really took it up to us and challenged us offensively and defensively, so it was good.
Might mention him a bit later in the podcast too. Just
what about your mate, Took Miller?
Took was very. I was going to say the same thing, mate. Yeah, he was. He was very impressive again. We'd actually had conversations throughout the night to try and negate him or negate his impact a little bit, just because he's so, like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, just his strength in the contest and the way that he's able to work between contests is quite incredible and unbelievably leads the way for the Suns.
Something I noticed from the same game, from your game, was Nick Holman and Zane Cordy had a little interaction in the goal square involving a water bottle, and Holman decided to be a bit of a smarty pants and squirt the water at Cordy as they were sort of walking back towards the goal square area at one point. And speaking, it just sort of tipped me over. This wasn't going to be my thing I noticed, but it sort of ticked me over when we were talking about how this time last year, things were so different in terms of the way the AFL and society was approaching COVID. Could you imagine if 12 months ago, a player was squirting another player with a water bottle they'd just drunk from and the implications of that? I know it's funny and it's, you know, it's, bit of
I thought you were going to talk about Dermot Brereton losing his marbles when he saw that, like it was the funniest thing he's ever seen.
Derm thinks things are funny every week, so it was quite humorous, but I just thought it was interesting sort of watching that and then just sort of thinking back 12 months about how, you know, every player has, I think they still do, don't they, Dunks? Every player has their own water bottle.
Yep, still do.
So I mean, yeah, he could have gotten a lot more trouble if he'd done that 14 months ago. Anyway, that was something I noticed. Yeah, Jake, you sort of mentioned it, but the AFL season is kind of, I think it's hanging in the balance at the moment. It almost makes sense for the AFL to have a week-long break at the moment, purely because there's just a lot of moving parts. And as you say, things are changing by the hour. We had that situation where the Giants and the Swans had to sort of swap out players at the very last minute because of the fact that they were caught up in exposure sites. And Dunks, as you mentioned, it's through no fault of their own. They were following, obviously, the regulations that were set by the relative state government where they were when they went to the rugby last week. But, I mean, at what point does moving the parts just become too hard and you say, all right, well, let's just shut it down for a week, have a bye week, maybe bring forward the pre-finals bye and reconvene in, you know, sort of 10 or 13 days when you can kind of get a grasp on what is happening in these other states with these lockdowns?
Well, I don't think we can go through a period where we're having, you know, something like what we saw in the Swans Giants game happening regularly. If that was a one-off, then I think the AFL can kind of live with that and move forward. But if we're getting that two or three times throughout a round, then there's a big problem. And we can't, and this is a question for you, Josh, but how difficult would it be to get that call up? Not so much as you're not able to play, but hang on a minute, you played yesterday, we need you to play again today, and you got an hour's notice. How difficult would that be as a player?
Yeah, it would be, it's extremely difficult. I think to be, obviously, you've played a game the day before, and your soreness levels are high, like your mentality, you're not even switched on to playing a game. You probably haven't eaten the way that you want to prepare for a game. Like there's so many different factors that come into it. And I don't think players, like I think the guys that actually came in did okay, but for some it would be a very, it would probably be their worst nightmare, mate, because some are so, you know, driven and want to do everything they can to make themselves ready for a game, and then to be called up really late is, yeah, is very difficult.
In the case of the Swans, like, you got to almost tip your hat to John Longmire and the way that he kind of got his troops up and ready. And you saw some of the scenes in the rooms where he was just sort of G-ing up the troops. And you look at that and you think that's a guy who is understanding that, well, obviously considering the way that Sydney has been in the last sort of month or 5 weeks or so, this is a man who clearly understands the changing nature of it and the way that he just sort of rallied everyone in that room. It's a little wonder they, despite the slow start, ran away with it.
I really think that was one of the best wins of the year. I know it was the Giants. I know there were a lot of factors there, but the way they were able to turn that game around Sydney, they could have easily folded. They've had a couple of games where they've just have been really off the ball and they kind of looked that way. And they had a game against Gold Coast where they were well beaten. And I thought it could be similar, but they really got on top in the second half and it was a great turnaround. But yeah, I think from the integrity point of view, it does start to damage the integrity of the sport if we're playing all these games, we're having to have all these changes at the last minute. It's just, it's going to get too much. But again, we don't know what's going to happen this weekend. As I said earlier, you're still unsure if we're going to go ahead with the games for this round. I think we will, but I wouldn't be surprised if something was to happen because we're now, you know, but everywhere's locked down. So...
At this stage of the season as well, I think Matt asked the question, you know, when do we sort of call off a week or take a week off? I think you just keep planning to play ahead as long as you can get all 9 games across. I think we're at this stage of the season where you can't have one game drop off the fixture, play 8 games and try to make that one game back somewhere else. I think it's too late. So again, to me, I think, you know, the AFL work 24/7 to make this happen, you know, before Friday and before the round starts. But as long as we're comfortable that we can get 9 games away in venues with or without crowds in whatever state they're in, I think the AFL will continue to plow ahead. I think it's that one time where you just have to, you know, you're going to have to cancel a Saturday night game. It's what do you do with the rest of the round? I think for then you need to almost stand everyone down.
Here's one off the top of my head, but where will the grand final be and will we have a full crowd?
I think they're hell bent on it being at the G, but I don't think there'll be a full crowd.
There's no way it can be.
At the G or with a full crowd?
Oh, a full crowd. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how can it? It's not like we're 6 months away from the grand final.
No, it's probably 2 months away. Two months away max. Well, that's the thing. You kind of got to hope that everything gets under control. But, you know, the alternatives are drying up pretty quickly. Yeah. And given the reluctance of West Australia to let anyone in, that also sort of throws that out as an option. So you're looking at sort of Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney and Perth are probably not the options right now. And you've got Brisbane as remaining.
Maybe Mars Stadium. Take it down there.
Get everyone in Ballarat down there.
Bloody cold. Well. Actually, no, it wouldn't be too bad by then.
Early spring. There's obviously a fine line between keeping the round going and what they did with the Giants and the Swans game and the integrity to set. I think the last thing I want to see is a team miss out on finals or a swap of spots happen because of something that could have been avoided. Like losing players to injuries, completely part of the process and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, if 3 players go to a cafe, dunks and have, you know, eggs on toast or whatever, and suddenly they have to quarantine for 14 days and they miss 2 games.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
Like that's when you sort of start to wonder about, you know, the integrity of the competition. But it is
If it's a week before the grand final and this happens and 3 star players from a team can't play because they've happened to be at a cafe. I mean, that sort of stuff gets really... And honestly, I can understand why players wouldn't want to check into places at that point because they've seen now what can happen. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but if I was a player and I knew and it was the week of the grand final,
well, that's wrong, Jack. They should probably be checking in.
Yeah, I agree with that. But can you understand why a player wouldn't do it?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably there'd be thousands of people that wouldn't be checking in.
Oh, there are. I was at the supermarket yesterday on my phone trying to scan it on my old bloody iPhone 6 or whatever it is, and it was taking forever for the camera to come up. About 20 people just walked straight through, and I thought, they've got to have someone at supermarkets where there's a lot of people going in. Fair enough, a cafe where there might not be as many people, but a supermarket, surely you're going to have someone there checking. Otherwise, what's the point?
We're getting a bit off topic here. but before we do move on, I guess, from COVID and all that sort of stuff, Do you see the MCG? Apparently, SEN's reporting that there's new stuff being discussed for the return of footy to the MCG for whenever that might be. And it's that they're going to not sell food or drink inside the stadium, masks to be worn at all times, including in the chairs, staggered entry times to avoid queuing, and a bigger spread of seating. And that's that last one that really got me, Jake, because we discussed this maybe a month ago, and I called the MCG and I said, you know, what's the deal? When you get crowds back after the last lockdown, are you going to open up more sections to more people? Because the way that they had been doing it, they'd been a cap of, say, 30%, but they'd only had 35% of the ground open. So you're still sitting close to people. And they said, no, because it costs too much money to open up all these to all these sections. And now we've seen that the MCG was a source of one of these outbreaks, or a spreading event for one of these outbreaks. And you just think, well, you know, you'd have fans there now if you could have spread them out more and hadn't had this sort of a spreading case. It just, honestly, it beggars belief that we did not have more of the G open to patrons despite the smaller percentage caps and having patrons more spread out. I cannot believe that that wasn't done 3 or 4 months ago after the year that we had last year with no fans at all.
I'm with you. I agree. I remember seeing a game in Geelong, I think it was, and they had, it was when they first started the crowd capping, but everyone was sitting next to each other. It's like, well, what's the point? So
yeah, 7,000 people at GMHBA were allowed, and two stands were open, and they were like within touching distance of each other. It just doesn't make sense. But
no.
Anyway, like we said, there's a lot happening. Sort it out, Gil. There's a lot happening, and it's a constantly moving beast. So by the time you listen to this, depending on when you are listening to this, you might know even more than us. Let's move on. Sam Walsh, another match-winning performance. Christian, he's now polled the most coaches' votes in 3 of his last 4 games, I believe. So it's fair to say he's in a fair patch of form, and he's only 21, and he's proving to be a bit of a match winner for the Blues. And look,
it's fair to say they need match winners.
Where does Sam Walsh rank Christian amongst, well, firstly, I guess, other midfielders this season, and then other 21-year-olds? I guess you look at some of Chris Judd won a Brownlow when he was around that age, and there are some players who obviously had amazing starts to their career. So where does Walsh rank in terms of, you know, the standings of players?
There is the numerous ways to look at, you know, where he's standing. So we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, relative rating. So that's just looking at this one season and his position, comparing it to everyone else at the same age across other years. So he's, you know, as we just said, he's a 21-year-old centre bounce midfielder. And it sort of comes up, it's for, in terms of average points per game, it's only the 10th most for a 21-year-old midfielder. But again, he's just turned 21, so he's, you know, a young 21-year-old. But some of the guys ahead of him, Clayton Oliver, Bonton Pally, Daniel Rich, who was the NAB Rising Star winner. I know he's a general defender now, but when he was playing midfield as a 21-year-old, had as many rating points as Sam Walsh, Adam Treloar, Patrick Cripps, and Tom Liberatore. So they're the sort of the 21-year-olds that have had as good a seasons as Sam Walsh as centre bounce midfielders. But again, sort of stepping the other way and just looking at what he's reached by, you know, as sort of said, he's just over 21 years of age. So he's already reached 1,424 disposals across his career. It's the second most of, or he's the sort of the second youngest player to reach that level, with only Clayton Oliver beating him by about, I think it's about 2 weeks. He was about 2 weeks younger than Sam Walsh is.
But that's not taken into account last year's shortened.
Correct. Yeah. I was just about to say that there's the little bit of asterisk next to Sam Walsh is he played a, you know, one of those seasons with 80% left of match time. So again, I haven't sort of, you know, fudged around with all the numbers to try to boost up 2020 or anything like that. Or everything I talk about here, he's getting screwed a little bit because of the short game. So second to Oliver in for total disposals. When you're looking at ground ball gets, so again, just winning the ball off the contest at ground level. There's 4 players ahead of him that were younger to reach the total that he is. And the names are pretty good. Chris Judd, Daniel Kerr, Ollie Wines, and Clayton Oliver. So they're one more ground ball gets by this stage of their, you know, being 21. Ranking points, another one that we use. Judd, Daniel Kerr, and Bonson Pally are the only 3 that have totaled more ranking points by this age. And another one that is high up in his uncontested possession, some different names here, Grant Birchall, Brandon Ellis, and Joel Selwood. They're the only players to be younger and win as many uncontested possessions. So, again, just, amongst extremely good midfielders in all of those categories.
I think his consistency is what should be really marveled at Sam Walsh. His ability to just do it every single week. And let's be honest, a team where he hasn't got a lot of support in the midfield, and he's become Carlton's best midfielder. Certainly has. And, you know, if Gat plays without Patrick Cripps and has arguably his best game of his career. I mean, he's had a lot of good games, but that was a very good one too. The other thing with Walsh that I really admire is in his first season, he was great, but everyone was like, well, he's not winning a lot of ball in at the stoppages. He's not winning a lot of contested ball. Well, then second year he came back and he's like, all right, I'll win a bit more contested ball. And then everyone's like, okay, well, now he's not kicking goals. Well, now he's come back and he's kicking goals again. His improvement, he almost is. I look at him now and I think, what's Sam Walsh's weakness? And it's no disrespect to Oliver or Bontempelli or any of these guys at that age, but I felt like they all kind of had a bit of a weakness at that age. What's Sam Walsh's weakness right now? That's my question. Yeah. What does he not do well?
Well, no, I don't know about his weakness, but I think one of his strengths and his greatest strength is something that we're seeing, or I'm starting to see a lot of from the younger kids, is his distance run. So he's in the top five, if not top three, for just total distance covered across games this year. I think back to when I was a kid and it was all about, you got to kick both sides. You got to be able to kick both sides of your body if you want to play AFL. I reckon now, especially the last 3 or 4 years since the tracking data has sort of, you know, been sort of growing and every player's wearing it. 3 or 4 years ago, it was led by 27, 28, 29-year-olds that were running the most distance. Now you're seeing a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-olds running. Dersma's another one that's high up for Port Adelaide. Sam Walsh, Nick Cox did it quite early for Essendon. I know his distance has sort of dropped a bit recently, but Sam Walsh, I think that's why they were playing him on the wing. In his first year, he was already a top 10 runner in the competition. I think a lot of the young kids now, they're really being drilled into them from a young age. You've got to be able to run out game. You've got to be able to cover 12 to 15 Ks by the time you get to AFL level to make it as an AFL player. It doesn't really matter if you can kick both sides anymore, but you've got to be able to run those Ks. And something
some players can't kick on Sam one Walsh side.
definitely something I noticed with Sam Walsh is, he's not only getting the ball, but he's running as hard as nearly every other player. So, again, the future just looks so bright for him for the next 10 years. If he can keep that up, he's just going to be, you know, almost unstoppable, because there is some players like Bontempelli, Dangerfield. They're probably, well, Bont's quite high up. He's usually top five for running. But Dangerfield, you know, never in the top 10 for distance covered. He's just more of a power player and can find the ball. Sam Walsh is finding the ball, hitting the scoreboard, but he can just run his opponent to the ground as well, which is just going to make it so much.
Makes him harder to tag and go with.
Well, it's a little wonder he's kicked 2 game-winning goals in the last 2 or 3 weeks, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because he's just able to get separation at the contest, and
we need a player's perspective, Dunks. What's he like to play against? What's he like? What have you noticed about him when you've lined up against the Blues?
Yeah, well, I haven't played the Blues for a couple of years, mate. So I reckon the first year that I would have played against him would have been his first year. So it's a tough one for me to sort of talk about, but. Yeah, the way that he's, obviously his form at the moment is incredible, and he's up there, he's rated up there, he's obviously getting talked about a lot in the media and getting the recognition. I think the other thing too about Walsh is he's a good person too, so it's always nice to see, you know, good blokes getting the recognition they deserve.
When you hear those stats that sort of Christian rolls out, and you hear Bont also in that sort of same breath in a lot of those, do you look at someone like Marcus Bontempelli and then at someone, Sam Walsh, and you see a similar trajectory of sort of just this superstardom, you know, having been with Bont for so many years now, like, do you kind of see similarities in terms of just the growth each year?
Yeah, I mean, watching Bont along my journey, I suppose, since being at the footy club, he hasn't changed much the way that he goes about it. You just, like, every day he's the ultimate professional. Like, he's continuously looking for ways to improve himself, whether that's, you know, going overseas and seeking out a coach to help him with his power work, or, you know, doing things after training where he's working on his strength and busting out of tackles, and the way that he's able to transform his game has been awesome to watch. And, you know, it's great for our footy club that everyone can look up to him and strive to be like him, because he's leading the way not only through his action but through obviously being a great leader for us too.
And from all accounts out of Carlton, Jake, Sam Walsh is one of those standard setters at training. Well, and
my biggest takeaway from that game against Collingwood was, and it's not an outrageous take, I think a lot of people probably thought this too, but I mean, give him the captaincy. when's he going to get the captaincy? I mean, you look at a game, a performance like that without Patrick Cripps playing, and he led by example. I mean, it was the perfect game. He couldn't have done any more. The way you talk about his running ability from 150 to the other, his ball use has got so much better. Not that it was ever bad, but it could have improved early on. I think that's another area where he's got even better in such a short period of time. And, you know, kicking a vital goal late in the game. I think he's got to be the next captain of that club.
Fair enough. You're running the Brownlow Predictor on ESPN.com.au. Where is he at, and is he a chance?
He's a chance. Absolutely, he's a chance. I look at him quite I put him in the same category as Jack Steele. I think both been fantastic this year. Both have been just about their side's best player every game, but haven't won an awful lot of games. But I think both of them were really good early on when their sides weren't winning, and can probably poll a lot of ones and potentially twos as well. So I've got Walsh and Steele in the top five at the moment. So and only within five votes of Bontempelli and Wines. So he's up there. He's in with a shot, that's for sure. Hey, speaking of Bontempelli, was anything spoken about his game? About I saw somewhere it was the most clangers any ever in a game by a player. Is that right, Christian?
I haven't seen that one. Was that from this weekend?
That was from this weekend's game. Apparently, it was the most clangers ever recorded by a player in a game.
I must admit, clangers is one stat I don't usually pay too much attention to.
That's a way to shut it down.
Ineffective disposals. Like if you get a clearance and it's surged forward to a contest where your forwards are competing, it's counted as ineffective if you don't win the ball.
Oh, but that won't be a clang. So that wouldn't be in his clanger count. So clangers would be turnovers, freeze against. I don't know. I hadn't looked into it, but
it didn't strike me that he had that many. I don't know.
He got caught a couple of times, but other than that, like, you know, for us, like, we'd rather him get caught with the ball,
yeah,
and do something special than you know, just give up on the contest.
Well, it's like Petrarca as well. I think Christian Petrarca got caught holding the ball a couple of times, but the way you can break the tackles, like you're not gonna you want them to be doing that.
That's four out of five times they will break the tackle and, you know, end up in part of a scoring chain. Getting sidetracked again, so let's move on. It's always you, Jake. You're the one. Hey, just on Bontempelli. Does any team sort of thereabouts in the race for the eight want to play finals? Because it certainly doesn't seem like the Saints, the Giants, or the Dockers do, because their performances were, look, honestly, the Saints squandered an opportunity to go on with a fourth quarter lead. The Giants had a 6-goal lead at one point, and the Dockers had a chance to really show the competition that they could be a finals chance with a home game against Geelong, and just kicked, what was it, 3-13?
Yeah, we know the Cats are good, but let's be honest, that was horrendous from Frio.
So
how much Richmond's fortunes had changed from from Thursday morning through to about Sunday morning? They were all of a sudden they were out of it.
Are they in a better position their way to back win into the flag it. Now, or were they last week? Because yeah, they're in a better position ladder wise and win wise, but they've just lost their best player for the year. They've got more injuries.
That's like a great call.
I don't know if I rate them a bigger chance now or less of a chance.
It'd be the ultimate Stephen Bradbury move if they end up going on with it from here, because they look down and out, and as you say, with Dusty out as well, it doesn't look good for them. But it just goes to show that now any team from sort of 7th to 13th, I think, can still make the finals and are half a chance of making the finals. So, I mean, we don't know where it's going to go, but it seems like some of these teams are going to be making up the numbers, so to speak, because it seems that there are sort of five, maybe six genuine teams that look like they're a real flag chance.
No, there's not. There's three. There's three genuine teams.
Well, so you reckon the rest are making up the numbers?
Yes.
Okay. Josh, you're the resident expert on this, because in 2016, your mob finished 7th and ended up winning the flag. You finished 7th last year as well and played finals and lost the first final. Do you ever feel like you're making up the numbers in finals?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, you know, you give yourself a shot, obviously. Well, for us, the last few years, we've had a really good back half of the season. And so to finish 7th or 8th, I think you give yourself a really good chance to, you know, if you win that first final, then you get the confidence going and you're taking it up to the next one. So, I mean, the way that we did it in 16 was obviously something that hasn't really happened before. But I never think that you're actually making up the numbers, no.
Jake? Yeah, I think players should be thinking that way, but I think realistically, you're looking at it now, and I think the top three are the top three for a reason. I don't think anyone else is really going to challenge them.
So you think that, hold on, let me get this. The ladder is Melbourne, Dogs, Geelong.
It's out of those.
They're the only three that can win the flag at this point.
Yeah, in my opinion. I'd be surprised if one of those three didn't win it. Yeah.
Mm. Well, we talked about playing premiership football, Christian, in the last couple of weeks. The Swans, are they still a chance?
Well, yeah, I just, again, they'll be the biggest surprise, obviously. And I think, you know, they've got the least probably finals experience, you know, of recent times of them. But again, I just looked at another sort of, you know, a good little indicator that sort of like to look across the season is just quarters one. So total amount of quarters one. And they're equal first along with Geelong and Bulldogs. So
Sydney is.
Yeah, 42 quarters one for the year, 24 losses. Yeah, so again, they're right up there. The turnover game, as I keep sort of talking about, is something that they're hanging their hat on, and that always stacks up well in finals. They've always got to be a sneaky chance for Mike.
How significant are quarters one when you talk about that as a stat? Like, is that a good indicator of, sure, if you win three out of four quarters in a game, you're obviously winning games, but like, is there a way that if you're winning earlier quarters, you're better off, or if you're winning later quarters, you're better off?
No, not really. It's just, again, it's just about winning the quarters. And I sort of, you know, mentioned to Josh pre-Potter, a lot of the clubs now, it's all broken down by just trying to win certain stats and quarters across a year. So you could come by round five, rather than looking at your five matches you played, you might actually look at the 20 quarters we've played, and we've won the contested possession 15 out of the 20. So trying to break out the game that way. And you're right, it's correlation versus causation. Clearly, if you're winning more games, you're winning more quarters. But there's no right or wrong way to do it. But I sort of did, you know, run my eyes of, you know, you do have teams that are clearly better early in games and better late in games and things like that. And a few quirky ones here and there. But, you know, just, you know, looking at the Bulldogs for one instance, so their best record is 13-3, and that's in first quarters. And that's the best in-quarter record of any team this year. So no other team sort of won 13 of their...
Do you know that, Dunks? Like, is that something you're aware... You know, as a player, you go into games and you generally start well?
Not unless you hear about it. Like, we haven't probably talked about us starting well. It's more about opposition teams, whether they start well or whether they don't. So it's trying to get a jump on them, trying to stop them from scoring, things like that. Like, we don't really tend to talk about us too much. But it's nice to hear that, yeah, we are up there with the start of games.
But then even on the flip side of that, another way to sort of look at it is points differential within a quarter. So again, another big tick for the Bulldogs. The best points differential of any team in a quarter is the Bulldogs in fourth quarters, who are actually plus 212 points. So that's the most, again, most dominant quarter. So you talk about, you know, is it better to start or finish early? The Bulldogs have it sort of at the bookends, at the first quarter and the last quarter, have them both covered.
Mm-hmm. When you're looking at games in review, Josh, is it more, you're not so much looking at the score of any one quarter or any one game, you're looking at the metrics within a game more so, like contested possession or meters gained? Or is there stuff you focus on a lot more than the score? Like, where does the score rank in terms of things you actually analyze?
Yeah, I mean, because the score is, you know, it's so public. Like, everyone knows what the score was at quarter time, half time, three quarter time, and the end of the game. We tend to look at, yeah, like you said, stoppage clearances, numbers, how much we're winning the ball forward after a clearance. So if we get a clearance, and then are our forwards winning it? Are they halving it, or are they losing it? And then same in the back end. Like, if we lose a stoppage, are our defenders winning it back? Things like that. Like, it's pretty confusing, but I think the numbers within the game are so important for us to understand how we're actually going as a line group, because that's what makes up the entire team.
Yeah, fair enough. Any other quarter stats, quirky or otherwise, Christian, that you've been able to pull up for us?
I mean, Adelaide are probably one that sort of done quite well in final quarter. So they've won the fewest quarters of any team. They've only won, second fewest, 23 quarters won. 9 of those have been final quarters. So pretty good towards the end of games. They're 9-8 in final quarters, but 2-15 in third quarters, which is the worst record of anyone in any quarter. So again, it's
a premiership quarter.
Probably just the quirky one, but yeah, come out at after half time, and the Crows have been quite flat this year. So again, as Josh just said, who knows if they've looked at that internally or not, or whether that's just a quirky number where it's, you know, you can't do much about it. But as I said, yeah, just the way I looked across at it, Sydney are positive in all four quarters. They're sort of, when you're talking top four teams, Sydney fall in there for, you know, quarters one, and and consistency across quarters too. I don't think they've you know, they haven't been smashed across any quarters. So yeah, just another one where, you know, spoke about Sydney, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago when I looked at turnover stuff, another one where there's the cheeky chance just sitting there with the good teams.
Speaking of, and I know I'm going on a slight tangent here, but I'll make it very quick.
No, you're right.
Speaking of weird, quirky stats, I saw this one. I don't know if you guys had seen this, but apparently the Doggies, the last three games, you guys have conceded the exact same score, 11-13-79, three times in a row. It's only happened once in history that a team has had this exact same score scored against them 3 weeks in a row.
Really? And
you're going for a record this week.
Well, so I can't really help with that.
I'm yeah, like... that's a bit strange.
It is a bit strange. Yeah, that's not too bad. Well done, Jake. Do you want to give credit? Is there someone? Is that a Sir Swamp Thing special?
No, it wasn't. I saw it on Facebook somewhere, and I just wrote it down. But yeah, it was quite strange. I checked it. I did fact check it. I'm not just going with these numbers, but yeah, apparently it's only happened. That was the second time it's ever happened in history, and it's never happened four games in a row. So
okay, keep an eye for that for sure. Hey, justified hype or hyperbole time? I'll say a statement to you guys. You tell me whether the hype is justified or I'm speaking in hyperbole. Jake, the effects mics are too loud at games with no crowds.
That is justified hype. They are so loud. They might be as loud as they normally are, but you don't normally hear anything because you got crowd noise. But I don't know about you guys, but I've been hearing a lot of swearing, and I'm prone to drop the F-bomb every now and then, but I don't do it on the podcast. I don't do it when we're broadcasting anything. And I think when you got games that are being played during the day or even at night and you got kids watching, do you want constant swearing? I don't mind if one slips through, but it's constant. I reckon I heard someone swear 20 times over the weekend.
One person know. Or just you heard swear
no, no, throughout
times.
Different players and people. Yeah. It's in fact, it's more the people on the bench you seem to hear barking instructions and swearing and yelling at players than you hear the players themselves. But yeah, I don't know. I like the idea of hearing it, and it's good. That's the one positive we have of not having crowds is you can hear a bit of the players, or you know, hear. It's like when you sit down on the fence, you hear a bit more of the game. But I don't know. I think we need to sort of try and cut down on the swearing a bit. Can you guys, Josh? Can you guys stop swearing out there?
Do you
notice it when you're out there?
Oh, sometimes.
It's probably not the first thing you're thinking of is like making sure I don't say the F bomb.
You're just in the moment. I think, like, it's a hard one. I agree that you probably don't want it out there on TV and, you know, kids hearing it or seeing it on, you know, live TV. But I don't know if they can just take the mics away. Can they just do that? Like, what are the mics there for? Just an insight or?
Well, I think normally they are there to pick up the sounds of the crowd because you want a little bit of background noise, or they put them in front of the cheer squad so you can hear the chanting and the clapping and all that sort of stuff in the broadcast. But yeah, maybe you could have them a bit higher up or a bit further away from the players to make sure you're not copying any F-bombs.
You have someone has a shot and it hits like the empty seat behind the goal and it's just bang, like you pick it, it's so loud.
Next one. What am I looking at here? Oh, I've lost where I am. The Hawks will regret their coaching handover plan, Jake.
Me again.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had to pull up something really quick.
They'll regret it. No, I don't think they'll regret it. Why would they regret it? I think I'm excited to see what Sam Mitchell can do. And I think Alistair Clarkson's race has been run at the Hawks, you know?
You've always been of that opinion, haven't you?
No, I mean, he's obviously a very successful coach, but my big thing is coaching's not as important as people make it out to be. If Alistair Clarkson's so great, why are Hawthorn 17th on the ladder this year? You know, it's the players that make the difference at the end of the day.
I saw it last night reported that there was a fight or something over.
Yeah, they had to have a mediation session about. Yeah,
it's hard to believe. Like, I think every good club has conversations about. Like, they'll be asking Mitch about, you know, what he wants, what they want it to look like, what he wants it to look like, and he's just going to be honest and open about what he's saying. And you know, if Clarko, I don't think Clarko would get, you know, the shits with that. I think it's more just a good conversation to have because then everyone knows where. On what he wants to do with his coaching field.
Fair enough. Dunks, going to stick with you on this one because you got a first-hand look at him on the weekend. But the Gold Coast Suns should replace their mascot with a life-size cutout of Jeremy Sharp, who looks like he's just the perfect sun, the blondie beach tan. Looks like he just needs a surfboard and he'd be perfect for the waves down there at Coolangatta.
Yeah, I think that's justified. He's a great, as you said, mascot. And, yeah, picture boy, pin-up boy, whatever you call it, for the Gold Coast Suns. We've got one that's very similar, Rourke Smith. And we actually joked about it pre-game because they lined up on each other last year in a practice game, not playing AFL. But then, obviously, this weekend, Rourke played and Sharpie played as well. So it was good to see them line up on each other. But, yeah, both very, very good pin-up boys for the Gold Coast scene, that's for sure.
What about change their name to the Gold Coast Surfers?
Does Rourke get around the surfing?
Yeah, he loves it.
Do he and Bevo get together and
hit the waves together? They go up to what's that surfing thing called near the airport there?
The fake waves.
Yeah, the fake waves and
yeah, that one.
But they love going out and post the bells and things like that. So
there you go. Christian, the Cats should be pissed off that they can't host the Tigers at GMHBA.
What did I say about swearing? Stop swearing.
Fair enough. Yeah, I walked into that one, didn't I?
But yeah, justified hype. Unusual. And that's their home ground, isn't it? I can't believe it's... the reason for it is just... it's irrelevant. They're not moving it because precedent was set with an Essendon game in round one. Well, that's irrelevant. Where we are at this stage of the season with COVID and everything else, I would have thought games are being moved here, there and everywhere. Let a team play at their home ground.
But given the fixture was in at the start of the season and we talked about the integrity of the competition earlier, I'm inclined to say that, well, the MCG is where it was scheduled to be.
To be at the MCG purely because they're going to get a bigger crowd there.
Yeah. Bulldogs Melbourne was scheduled for round 20 instead of round 90. So we're moving other things around. I don't understand why this one can't be moved around. Yeah,
that's fair. That is absolutely fair. Obviously, plenty to discuss this week as we've done. Dunks, 14 days in ISO. You got a few days left, or about a week left. What are you planning to do for the next week or so? You trying to get some training in at home, or?
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate. I've actually got a decent setup in there. I've just set up my garage to be a gym, so got all decked out with Iron Edge equipment, and it's nice to. I've got a watt bike. I've got a treadmill as well. So I'm pretty well set up for the next few days, and yeah, I think it's going to be challenging at times, but it's nice to be able to, come on here and have a chat with you guys and just continue to be the human that I am, because you don't want to isolate too much and not talk to anyone because it'd probably be a dampener on your mood.
Are you going to start a TV series or something?
I've just finished one. It's called Startup. Has anyone seen that on Netflix?
No, Startup.
Anything good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's all about cryptocurrency. That seems to be a big talking point at the moment.
Are you a crypto fan?
Well, I don't know if I'm a fan. I don't mind it.
Do you own cryptocurrency?
I do own cryptocurrency, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is that like the modern day players, like instead of getting into all these betting syndicates, you're getting into cryptocurrency together?
I'd probably agree to that. Like the players and it's more shares and crypto and things like that. Rather than betting, which is
probably more mature investments instead of the betting one.
Yeah, for sure.
So a little safer.
there's stuff coming out now like crypto horses, and it's wild. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, one of those, Jake.
What's that?
There's crypto horses now, apparently.
Yeah, that's mental. All right, I'll have to get on it.
And it sounds like you'll be getting takeaway coffees instead for the next week or so as well, instead of heading out to your favorite cafe.
Yeah, well, I won't be going to any cafe anytime soon. Probably only when I get out of isolation, I won't be doing that either. I might just get takeaway and steer clear.
Just until the end of the footy season, perhaps.
Yeah.
Very good. No, thanks for joining us. Happy to have you on, especially given the situation you're in. More than happy to have you on whenever you want. So if you're feeling a bit bored next week, just give us a shout.
Sounds good, mate. Thanks for having me.
All right, Christian, Jake, thanks again. And to everyone listening at home, we'll speak to you in the next one.
Listen to all the latest episodes by subscribing to the ESPN Footy Pod, wherever you get your podcasts.